27th, 1990, and members present are Representatives Boyer, Davis. Representative Gall is with us here in close proximity, and myself, Representative Ellis. We have a number of items on today's calendar. We plan to further consider and pass on the three bills from the Joint Special Committee on School Performance that were reviewed during yesterday's hearing. We'll be hearing from Representative Kadena on House Bills 497 and 498 about the establishment and appropriation for a master teacher program in the state of Alaska. And then we'll go back to a bill that's been held over from previous meetings, House Bill 398, Adjustment of Prior Year Foundation Aid. So with that stated, I'll ask if there's any further committee discussion on the school performance bills, because we'll need to take each of those up individually and then take a motion on each to move them along. Has any, have any issues arisen in anyone's mind over since our last meeting? If not, Representative Boyer, I'll, House Bill 469 is now before the committee, and I'll entertain a motion on final disposition.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we pass HB 469 from committee with individual recommendations.
Is there any objection to the motion? Hearing none, so ordered. House Bill 470 is now before the committee.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we pass out HB 470 with individual recommendations.
Without objection, so ordered. And House Concurrent Resolution 46 is now before the committee.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we pass out HCR 46 with individual recommendations.
Without objection, all three bills move on to the next committee of referral. Representative Kubina will be joining us in about 20 minutes, so we will set 497 and 498 aside. We need a few moments on the other matters before those can come before us. I guess everyone here has signed this letter to the State Medical Association. We'll just pass that around. Since there's nothing for us to do for about the next 20 minutes, the committee will stand in recess until 9 a.m. The HES committee's back in session. Actually, we need to turn on the tape over here. Jim, can you turn on the tape? The HES committee's called back to order, and our guest this morning is Representative Kubina, prime sponsor of two bills before us, House Bills 497, creating a master teacher program in the state of Alaska, and 498, an appropriation for that program. Good morning, and please go ahead with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you very much for hearing this bill so promptly. I will say that I don't have a lot of backup for this bill yet. I have mailed it out to the universities and some school districts, and hope to have some backup support for it. Let me tell you basically what this bill does. It creates a program which I called, for lack of a better name, a master teacher program. And in a nutshell, what it would do would it be for the universities that have a teacher training program, which would be Fairbanks, Anchorage, Southeast, and possibly Prince William Sound, who is in the budget this year for having one, to call upon a school district to provide one teacher for each of those programs. Under this program, let's see, the college, the university would pick a school district. Let's say, I'll give you some examples. Fairbanks may be having a lot of people, training a lot of teachers from the bush, so they might pick Bering Strait School District or something. And they would ask that that school district participate in the master teacher program. The school district would then send out a notice to teachers and say that and ask for letters of interest to teachers who would like to participate in the program, and at what level the university was interested in. For example, they might want an elementary school teacher or a high school science teacher or something. Then a committee of three teachers and one administrator and one person from the university would review the applications and pick a teacher out of those applications. And then that teacher would go to work that year and work with the student teachers in that particular university's program. Now the reason that I've been in education for 16, 17 years now, and I believe that the teacher training program, the student teaching part, is really a very important part on how a teacher ends up, how they perceive themselves, or what kind of teacher you are. You know, a lot of people are intelligent, they go to school, they get straight A's, but that doesn't make a good teacher. The most intelligent person may be one of our worst teachers because they don't have the ability to either control the classroom, they don't have the ability to relate to the age group maybe that they're working with. And I think for us to have good teachers, we need to take someone that has been teaching, that has the experience, that has the support of their peers, that is recognized as a good teacher by teachers, to put that person to work with the student teachers. What happens now is the university, of course, staff works with these teachers, and I don't want to say anything negative about the staff of the university, but the simple truth is that oftentimes these people are working with these student teachers have not been in the classroom for many, many years. And so I believe strongly that we need that experienced person, that someone that came right out of that classroom working with them and helping them develop. There's a lot of things that go into making a good teacher, and one of them is control, and the other one's relating to students. And I think if you have someone that is seen as a good person in this job working with them, they'll have a higher success rate. No, I'm a real promoter of having tougher teacher standards. I think we should only have the very best people that are out there going into the teaching profession. And I don't mind seeing people that can't cut the mustard cut out. I'd rather see these people cut out. I'd rather we have just the toughest criteria there was to put people in there, even if it meant we had a shortage of teachers and had raised salaries so that we could attract more. I don't care. I think we need the best. But I think this is one way to allow these people to develop. If you've ever been in a classroom, maybe as a student yourself or one of your children, and watch a teacher struggling with a class, it's really a sad sight. The teacher themselves know they're struggling. The students read it just like that. They're all over that person. That person then doesn't have any control. There's no learning going on. And I think one thing that we can do, and this is a program that I think would put some immediate effect on our education at really very low cost dollar-wise. The fiscal note, or the second bill at $250,000, was just an estimate of what it would cost to pay four teachers' salaries for 1 year, including all their benefits and everything, to reimburse the school districts. After this one-year period, this teacher would then go back to their school district and go right back into the classroom, the same job they had, that would be guaranteed in the bill. Questions?
Questions for the sponsor, Representative Davis.
Thank you. Two questions I have. One is on page 2, line 1, 2, and 3, where the teacher members of the committee shall be appointed by the bargaining organization. Mm-hmm. My only question is a concern that you might have teachers that are either not very active in their bargaining unit or maybe not even in it at all that might qualify to participate, and I wonder if that is going to limit, you know what I'm getting at.
Good point. And when I wrote this bill the first time, I had it that the teachers within that school district would vote. Mm-hmm. Well, that works real well for a small district, but what do we do if it's Anchorage that's chosen? Person over, you know, in a high school that's got 150 teachers has no idea if Miss Good over in third grade is a good teacher or not. And I tried to think of a way to deal with that. What I want is I want the teachers to choose the person because I think they know, I know in my school, who would be good at working with young teachers to get them going. I didn't want it to be some political appointment by the administration or who's, and...
And I can't think of a better way either.
Yeah.
I'm just...
The only other way I could think of doing it is having each individual school district, depending on, you know, set standards. If it was less than 100 teachers, the whole district would vote. If it was more than 100 teachers, maybe the school district picked a school, and then the teachers within that school would vote. You know, I'm real open to change, but I just think it's important that the teachers themselves... I originally was going to leave out the administrator and the person from the university, but then felt this might draw more support this way.
My second question, if I could just finish a minute. On page 2, lines 13 through 16, where you've got, you know, coming back to the district, I don't know, and I'm not, you know, this may be a moot point, but is that language better than language that would just say something along the lines of complying with the leave of absence language in the negotiated agreement or something along? I'm just wondering if...
Let me explain that difference there. This language really is similar to returning from a sabbatical.
Okay.
If you return from a sabbatical, you have the right to the same position. Normally, if you're returning just from a leave of absence, you have the right to an equal or a position, period. So we felt that it would... We didn't want to discourage people from losing. We wanted, you know, and a lot of times the best people also have the best positions because they've been there, they've been rewarded in getting the jobs they wanted, and we wanted them to be able to go back to that.
Representative Grimberg?
I've just looked through and I have several thoughts and suggestions. With respect to pay, and I'm just in the order, and then some of them are what Sherry just said, mm-hmm. too. On page 1, lines 11 through 13, you have only listed certain colleges and universities. And I can see private colleges and universities also wanting to participate in this. And what my staff, actually this is Mark Hanley, and this also relates back to the definition of college and university page 2, line 28-29, why not just say any accredited 2 or 4 year college or university in the state? And you might take a look for such a definition in the university tax credit bill we passed several years ago in the 15th legislature. I think it was House Bill 6. That way, any accredited college or university, public or private, could participate.
Well, I guess I'd say this. Number one, it's going to increase the fiscal note, of course, because there's going to be more universities eligible. Number two, I'm a rookie at this, obviously. I'm not sure how you deal with state government subsidizing private institutions. And in essence, that's what you'd be doing because you'd be providing them with an employee. This may be a way it should go, and I'm not sure.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought of it with that issue in mind, but as the other representatives here who were here on the 15th will recall, that was an issue, and we did some considerable legal research on that, which I'm happy to share with you. I think it would withstand a constitutional challenge, but there's something. These are just suggestions for you to think about, and I'm happy to share with you my stuff on
that. Representative Grimberg, do you know that there are private colleges in the state of Alaska that run teacher education programs?
I don't know one way or the other.
Representative Kubina, do you know?
I believe, I wasn't aware of that one, if Sheldon Jackson does, and I do believe Alaska Pacific does.
And certainly in the future, that may very well
So that'd be too. Two more. So that, you look also at the fiscal note, what that would do, so
I don't know that, I wasn't thinking of the fiscal note, but if you're concerned about that, you could simply say in the bill that if a private university participates, it will be at their own expense.
Oh, and that way would make the...
Then there wouldn't be any constitutional problem.
But it would give the protection to the teachers, that they could do... do the program and still come back to their job?
I wasn't thinking in terms of the money. I was thinking in terms of allowing the kids who go to the private colleges and universities the benefit of having these expert teachers.
Good point.
May I just, I have several comments.
Sure.
Okay. Should I go on? Mm-hmm. Okay. Secondly, on page 1, lines 15 and 16, student teachers, that implies to me that they're in their final year. I was wondering if you would say just students generally, because it may be good to get some of these really good teachers in to teach even freshmen who are thinking of going into teachers, because it really, a good professor can spark somebody's interest and change their life and ensure they stay in that field.
Representative Cubino?
Originally when I wrote this bill, also that is what I had in there, to work with students. And I came to the decision that no, that's not what I wanted to do with this bill. I want these people to work with student teachers. Student teachers, if you've ever seen the program work, at least the ones that come to Valdez, because we don't have a university right there, and Prince William Sound Community College is just starting their program, they have very little supervision other than the teacher that they're working for themselves, or if the principal in that school is active with them, which some cases they may be and others they may not. They really don't have a responsibility there. So somebody from the university would come down, I think, a couple times during their however many weeks that they spend there. Now, my concept of this, the way I envision it working, is for them to work specifically with student teachers. That's the people that I want them to hit. If I left it at that also, I think it would give the university the opportunity to use them in curriculum writing and working in regular classroom situations. I think this should be somebody added on working with those, targeting those people that are getting ready to go in the classroom.
My staff, on page 1, line 18, that whole sub B, it looks like you're only allowing a university to choose one school district. Was that intentional, not allowing them to, for example, maybe saying, well, we'd like to have a large school district participate and also a small rural school district. So that way that particular class of students would get the benefit of having some master teachers who are experienced in working in the bush and some who are experienced in working in a big city or something like that.
That's a good point, and the reason it's written this way is I was thinking purely on a fiscal note again, that I was trying to get the program started and through a two-year period and see how it worked, to see if we get the positive response out of it that I think we would, and then if we could budget for that.
Sure.
Then
you can
expand that. Absolutely.
This would not require anything more, and just there'd be so much money. I mean, that can be dealt with, I'm sure, in the drafting. Mr. Sherman, may I
continue? Sure.
Okay. Now, my staff had suggested on page 1, line 24, letters of interest and recommendations from all the teachers. So, in other words, it wouldn't just be somebody tooting their own horn, but somebody, one person might say, another person would be good. So that would be.
Well, maybe you would want to say or recommendations. In other words, either way, yeah.
Whatever. And they then again, the same thing on page 2, line 1, after letters of interest, what they suggested was and recommendations, interview candidates when feasible and select the master teacher. If you wanted to get into that kind of detail in the bill, I hope you don't mind me. Is this too detailed?
No, I'd appreciate you raising the issues, Representative Cubina making note of them, and going back to work on them later. So we don't need to go into complete detail, but okay. You'd raise the high points.
Okay. And and I can give you the language there. Also, again, on line 29, if you're going to allow other universities to participate, you would say one representative from the college or university rather than just limiting it to the University of Alaska, and that'd be conforming. One comment in answer to Representative Davis's question on page 2, line 3. I would say a way of dealing with this would be to allow the appropriate agency or university or somebody to set this by regulation, how this teachers would be selected. And I really don't know who would do that, but that might be the kind of thing that, rather than putting it in statute, that when they actually get the program up, that that would be the kind of detail they would work out, how the teachers would be selected.
Well, I guess if I could make the language very clear that it is teachers that are going to select them, is my main thing, that I want teachers to choose these people, not.
And then a technical thing, Mr. Chairman. On page 2, line 6, that sounds like there's only one master teacher. You might want to say teachers, plural. And on page 2, line 8, I didn't know, it seems to me you wanted, I didn't know if you wanted to have it last for a full calendar year or a school year.
On the date set out in the agreement, and one for 1 year from that date.
I had similar questions about subsection G, and I don't know enough about how this works. But I didn't know if you were talking about the exact position the person occupied or just an equivalent position.
The position. And this is, as standing, as I say, this is the same thing as being on a sabbatical leave thing. Unless otherwise they would get their very same job. And it's really easy that way for the school district, because when they hire someone, they hire them saying, this is a one-year position to replace. And school district don't normally mind to do that badly, because it gives them an opportunity then to watch that person teach, knowing that they're only there for a year, and if they do a good job, they get to years experience with watching them and see if they want to hire them permanently.
Okay, and then I didn't know on page 2, line 20 through 22, whether you would want to allow this to be counted for tenure purposes. Because that may, if somebody is a good teacher, and I don't know how long you need to have to work to have tenure, but let us say you need to have 10 years to have tenure, and you're a really good teacher. What is it?
I knew Representative Davis was going to find that funny.
What
2 years and 1 day.
Oh, 2 years and 1 day. Oh.
First day of the third year of number one. Number two, I can't imagine someone not being tenured teacher to be chosen for this program as a master teacher.
Okay, well, if it's only 2 years, then. Technically on line 23, I think, I don't know that the Board of Regents adopts rules. I think you may want to say regulations, but that's something you should be doing. And that's.
Is that about it? Okay, Representative Grunberg, I'll never object to doing committee work in committee, so I appreciate you highlighting those things. For Representative Kubina, and when the bills are back before us again, we'll go through the non-technical things and see how how the sponsor would like to come down on them. Is there anything further for the sponsor? If not, if you could stay with us, Representative Kubina, we have one witness signed up to testify, Mr. Potter. If you could join us. And then we'll ask DOE to make a quick comment, and then we'll be moving along.
My name is Bill Potter, and I'm representing NEA Alaska. NEA Alaska supports HB 497 and 498 to pay for it. Bill utilizes skilled and experienced classroom teachers in the teacher training programs of the University of Alaska system. NEA Alaska has for years been on record favoring modification of teacher training programs to include significant instruction of teacher trainees by practicing professionals. While there is much good in our teacher training programs, there is widespread concern from both recently trained and experienced teachers with a missing component of hard practical instruction from classroom practitioners. The concept of utilizing skilled, experienced classroom teachers as part of a teacher training program is within both the guidelines of NASDEC, the standards for the approval of teacher training programs used by the state of Alaska, and by NCAPE, the national standards used for approval of teacher education programs throughout the country. The only problems we have with the bill as written is we're a little leery about allowing the university to choose the district to participate. It seems to us that the university is likely to pick the district where they're planning on placing their student teachers and or the local community where the university is located. Now, once having said that, we have no solution for erasing that concern, but I'm sure that the committee or the sponsor in their wisdom can come up with something. In conclusion, in addition to a good subject matter foundation, the more practical the training received by a teacher trainee, the more successful will be that teacher's initial teaching experience. And I thank you for your consideration, and we'll be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Mr. Potter, thank you for being here this morning. Are there any questions? If not, thank you, and we appreciate having a copy of your written comments for the file. Mr. Hold, could you quickly state the department's position on the legislation?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Steve Holt from the department. I want to make it clear the board hasn't acted on this bill yet, but it's certainly our recommendation that they support it. We think it's a good idea. It sets out a program that's likely to have a positive effect in improving teacher training programs. We'd like to see it enacted.
Okay. And I guess a fiscal note is being looked for. Is that the status of...
It's hiding somewhere. I wrote one last week. It's a zero fiscal note. I'll make sure you get one this morning.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Cole. Representative Kavina, do you have any idea when some of the backup and materials and things that you mentioned would be here? Would in the next week or so?
I would hope so.
Okay. Okay. We will hold over 497 and 498 and have those bills back before us in the near future for final action.
I appreciate it.
Thank you for being with us this morning. We have before us now House Bill 398 relating to adjustment of the prior year foundation aid, and we're very happy to have Representative Larson with us this morning. Could you join us at the table? It's been a little difficult to get this conversation together, and let me just lay it out for everyone. This bill's been before us a couple of times. There is a proposed amendment from Representative Gall that we should provide to Representative Larson so he can join in on this. I expect Representative Gall to come back and join us here any minute. Ron, what we've really come down to is sort of a philosophical split in the committee, I guess you'd call it, over... that's highlighted by this legislation. And the department has testified in the past. Well, Nina, before we go into this, could you try and find Representative Gall for us, please, and Representative Groomberg? Ron, can you stay with us for a few minutes until we...
Okay.
Because what we want to do is talk about a piecemeal approach to the foundation formula and reviewing that, or a comprehensive approach, or just what's compatible in our work plan between the Finance Committee and the HES Committee. Walk in the middle of our discussion, we'll have to reinvent the whole thing. And is Representative Grimberg on his way? is, Terry, have you seen Walt today?
Tell him what she's doing.
Have you seen Walt?
I just don't want to lose this call.
This is a discussion everybody, you know, we should all be in on.
Yeah, whatever, that's what she was going to do.
Yeah, just.
It would be nicer if I could do it here, but.
She could transfer the call to you too.
Yeah, it'll work, I'll just run down there.
Thanks a lot.
We're waiting for our members.
We're just gonna wait a second for Max.
Max won't be back.
Oh, he won't.
He's up in Speaker's office.
Let's see, we have a.
He said he'd be back in 10 minutes.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and start this discussion. 398 is back before us. We will, in a few minutes, be considering amendment, we'll consider amendment number one. I think it's the only amendment that people have provided to the committee. It's by Representative Gall. We had some discussion on this last time, or maybe the time before that, with this bill. And Representative Gall, why don't you go ahead and move amendment number one?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, amendment number one is before us. I invited Representative Larson here because John Antonin from the Department of Education had mentioned to me at a previous meeting that he had made a proposal to Representative Larson for a comprehensive approach to the foundation formula, for reviewing that. And it's also been expressed that this committee is an appropriate place for that to happen, because over last session and now with this legislation, there have been proposals, several that moved forward last year, that sort of split our committee in terms of changes to the formula. The single site and dual site legislation moved from Hess on up to the Finance Committee last year. And those were very difficult discussions, to put it plainly, here in this committee. Those bills did move forward, but there's been a growing consensus on the part of the committee that there should be, you know, with or without the adoption of amendment number one to 398, that it has to move along, in my opinion, that there should be a more holistic discussion of the formula and review of the formula. And I think there's a great willingness on the part of this committee to figure out with you, Representative Larson, how best to pursue that. There's a willingness on this committee to dig in and work on it. So with amendment number one before us, we just want to open it up to discussion and get the feelings of that you have on it and the members of the committee.
Okay, thank you, Chairman Ellis. You really open up here something that I think is important, but it's easier to, I guess, talk about and discuss than to do. As you know, we've already spent, what, $180,000 looking at the area cost differential study to make sure we had the latest information based on school district values instead of regional approach. And that bill still lingers, basically because those districts that would gain money are for it, those who would lose money are against it. And I think, you know, we could say that it might be nice to go ahead and do another study in relation to the formula funding on instructional units. And I think the results would be the same. We'd have a study, spend a lot of money, and no one be willing to implement it. So that's really a serious concern that I have. I think maybe things are fundamentally to such an extent that we have to look at not only what we do, but also look at the entire system of how we provide education in Alaska. I did just little things right out of the profile of Alaska Public School Districts. And I guess what I'm talking about here is that in order to adequately fund education, we just have to look at the total program. For an example, in, well, let me just use some of the things that I have here. And I'll use my own district, because I'm quite familiar with that. In the Mat-Su district, we spend roughly $5,200 per student per year. Here's another district that spends $6,489 just for administrative costs. Here's another district that spends $20,480 per student. Here's another district that spends $22,000 per student. I think we can no longer just look at the whole issue in isolation. Then we got to correct this in the foundation unit, or to correct this in the area cost differential. I think if we're going to do another study, we really have to look at the whole way in which we provide educational services to the students of the state of Alaska. And I guess, and this is strictly my opinion, I don't think we need school districts as we have present ones existing, you know, with 20-some students. I think we can start looking for contracting out those administrative services. I think we can look towards the Department of Education, establishing an agency within it or a division that can handle a lot of the administrative work. And I think once we start to tackle those big problems, then we can take a look at instructional units and so forth and see what we can really do to make the dollars we spend go towards education and not administrative and overhead costs. And I think any changes we make in the instructional units, and you look at the single dual sites, let me just give an example of a single dual site if I brought it here with me that says they need more money. Well, here's one that's 3.9 mils. That's really under the 4 mil, but they're being phased in, so legally they're 3.9 mils. They say they need $76,200, but they also spend $40,000 on a lobbyist. I think there's things that we really need to look at there to say, are they spending the money once again on education, or are they spending the money on something else, or do they have the means to help themselves a little bit more, not expect the state to do everything for them. So, I guess I'm going to thank you for the opportunity to just come down here and blow a little steam today, but there's where I think we really have to start directing our attention to. How can we set up and establish a better system in Alaska for providing education to our students instead of continuing with the old antiquated system that we have at this time? And we might say that's true with our state government too, not only the school districts. But I'd be happy to try to answer any questions. But the other thing I brought down, as we have discussed many times, everything we do costs money. And everything we do now, I think we're going to have to remember, if we're going to stay under the spending limit, anything we add, we're going to have to subtract from something else. And that something else may not be something that we want to subtract from, or it may have equal or higher importance. So we always have to keep that in mind. And I just brought down some of these for your information in relation to the spending limit. It's really nothing to discuss today.
Representative Larson, I should note that Representative Grimberg and Representative Furness have joined us. Representative Furness, amendment number one by Representative Gall is before us. We're on House Bill 398, and that's the amendment that was discussed at previous meetings. As I said before, the Department of Education, I think most of you heard it, testified that they needed House Bill 398 to pass along through the process, that the only negative comment they made, and it wasn't directed necessarily at the amendment, but just generally, was that they would hate to see this bill become a Christmas tree for everyone's changes in the formula. And that prompted Representative Boyer to comment, and he can speak for himself here in a moment, that I mean, there are members of the committee that don't want to see that happen, don't want to see discrete changes made to the formula, but prefer a more comprehensive approach. And Representative Larson, you made your views clear about where we might get with the study proposed by DOE and their proposal to you that's now been shared with the committee, and I think all members have in their packets. So I just, you know, under the rubric of amendment number one, let's continue this discussion and see how folks feel. As we go along here, when it seems appropriate, Representative Gall will jump in. Remind us about the substance of his amendment, and we'll bring that into the discussion as well. But it's all a big swirling set of issues here that I wanted to have, you know, in relation to this bill and this amendment. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Larson has made some good points. There are a lot of valid concerns and arguments about the whole issue of how we fund schools. I agree that we probably need to look at the whole picture. You know, how do we do it now? Is there a better way? All of those kinds of things. That kind of philosophical discussions and whatever would be great. However, the political realities behind changing some of that, as we all know, are difficult at best. And I don't know if we're in a political position right now to be able to do all of those changes. Having said that, I'm all for the discussion. I think it'd be great. The arguments against putting an amendment on this bill at this point have been basically, well, we need to do look at the whole foundation formula. I agree. You, Mr. Chairman, have indicated a willingness and a desire to go ahead and do that, regardless of what we do, as I understand it, with this bill or any other. And I'm supportive of that. I think it's time. I don't think we need a bunch of new studies. I think there are some changes that we could make with the formula that we could make in a fairly reasonable time frame and would be beneficial. Looking at this bill and looking at this amendment, my concerns are that all of the issues that Representative Larson talked about aside, this amendment to me makes sense with this bill because of the type of thing this bill was trying to do in the first place, and this is a similar kind of a thing that's not very closely related. If, regardless of whether a school district is receiving the right amount of money or whether they should be consolidated or whether they have the right kind of administration or all of those things, there are kids, I think, that are being hurt by the lack of a hold harmless provision, if you want to call it that. That seems the simplest thing to call it, in the foundation right now that works. And Steve Hole testified to us that what's in there now doesn't work. The old one worked, the new one doesn't. And this is the old one, in essence, as I understand it. This is the way it used to be, the old hold harmless. And I don't see it as a matter of whether somebody's getting the right amount of money or the wrong amount of money or anything else. It's just a simple matter to me that if enrollment drops by a substantial amount, there ought to be a way to phase in that decrease in funding in a district. And I don't differentiate between, there may be districts within that would fit within this that are receiving money that Representative Larson would find they don't need. But there are also, I'm sure, districts that have this problem that are in really tough straits that are doing everything the right way, and this would really help them. And I don't think this is going to affect us dealing with the foundation formula in total, because I think we're committed to do that. At least this committee is, and this committee can do it.
Representative Grunberg.
Just one thing, and this is on the amendment that I will comment to Representative Larson. If you have a very small district, a district with 80 students, and there's a decrease in 8 students, that'll trigger this. In a large district like Anchorage, you could have literally thousands of people drop out, and it wouldn't trigger this because it's on a percentage basis. And I don't know if that's fair. That's my first comment.
Representative Gall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple of general remarks I'd like to make after Mr. Grunberg's, but just in response to that, I think it's extraordinarily fair for just exactly those reasons, that when you do have a small district, the impact of a small number of students leaving in terms of the total income coming into the district and their ability to operate can be very profound. When you have a large district, if 8 students leave, it doesn't matter, but when a large number of students leave, have a very profound effect on the district. And the point of the amendment is not to deal in any way with the Formula Foundation. On the contrary, the point of the amendment is to recognize that the problems in the formula will require a large-scale revision, and that this is not germane to that at all. This is just to say that where a large percentage impact of funding cut falls on any district, that they'd be given a little bit of time to absorb that, simply because of exactly what you said. A small number of students out of a small district can have a profound impact. Large number of students out of a large district can have a profound impact.
30 elementary schools. And
or more than that.
52. And a fair number of junior highs and high schools. If, let us say, there's a major base closure, and I'm just using that as an example, that a lot of people leave or pull down one of the bases, that may involve the closure of one or more entire schools. And that's an expensive proposition for the school district, I think. Just something to keep in mind that I don't know how you deal with it, but we could be literally talking about the closure of schools. And I'm using that as an example, which is a fair number of students, but concentrated in one part of the city. So it really impacts on, as I say, the worst case scenario is, or like in a Government Hill situation, where you have a lot of people move out of one part of town, and you have the close down the school or something. That's an expensive proposition for the district, and I don't know how you deal with that.
Let me ask at this point, is there anyone who needs an explanation of Representative Gall's amendment? Okay, we all know what we're talking about when we get to that amendment. Representative Gall?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to speak for a moment to the amendment, the history of the amendment before the committee, and make some introductory
remarks.
Okay,
if you could hang on just a moment. Representative Boyer, did you have something on the previous points?
It may better follow the representative's
okay.
Comments.
Peter, go ahead.
Thank you, Mark. The amendment was brought to my attention by a couple of school districts, in particular the city of Heidelberg is facing this right now. Yeah, a couple of years ago, we had a critically similar situation in Skagway when the railroad closed, and around the same time, we had a situation in Haines. These things happen and need to be addressed. There are going to be at least one, maybe two witnesses to speak to that in a moment. The issue was brought up before the committee, and the Department of Education representative commented that they are interested in a large-scale formula revision and didn't want to do anything which might take pressure away from motivating us towards looking at that. So I arranged to speak with Mr. Gottstein, who was named as the chairman of the board who had this position, and Barney was very interested in the issues that Mr. Larson just raised and felt that although this is a matter of debate in the legislature, as you all know, felt that dealing with single-site, dual-site schools and that sort of thing, which directly impact the formula, would, in fact, in his view, take some of the pressure away from making larger formula changes. I then brought up the subject of this amendment and was told explicitly and without any reservation that this amendment did not fall into that category, that this was something which he, Barney Gottstein, could conceptually support, and that he did not feel that it rose to the level of interfering in any way, shape, or form with the development of a large-scale formula revision. It was his intent to make that point through the department to the committee today, but unfortunately, but he asked for some additional information. He asked if we could give him some specific examples so that he could be, you know, in a better position to justify his feelings. Carl Rose of the School Boards Association attempted to reach Mr. Gottstein, but because of Barney's meeting schedule, was unable to do so. So I made contact just now, a few moments ago, and basically Barney reiterated that he had no objection, that he felt conceptually the thing was fine, but that he didn't have the detail information at his disposal in order to make specific comment. And he is aware that Mr. Rose is here and will be able to make that specific comment specifically to the committee at this point. So I don't feel that to the best of my knowledge, there is any Board of Education problem here, and I feel that the amendment is just basic good management of an economic system, a financial system. If the funds coming into a school district are triggered by enrollment. And if, as Mr. Gruenberg said, the military base moves or something like that, they still have debts to pay, they still have obligations to meet, and it is just not responsible to suddenly slash the budget, but rather to give them just a little bit of lag time to phase down their operation. I have not heard anybody disagree with that for substantive reasons in the last 8 years, and I've heard this subject discussed many times in various ways as we've tried to protect the integrity of the financial structure of our schools. So I believe that Mr. Rose and possibly Mr. McPheeters will be able to give you historical and projected examples of why this is needed. And I believe also that Representative Davis, who is intimate with this subject, can maybe fill in the gaps where they may be. I would answer any questions. I'd urge the committee to support it. I don't think it has a downside, and I think it's very badly needed. Appreciate the opportunity to share this information with the committee.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Boyer's next.
I'm sorry. I just had a question on this one thing.
I do too. Are you making more expansive universal comments about the
specific
whole situation?
No.
Okay.
Not this time.
Representative Gruenberg?
I was just going to say, I wasn't quibbling at all with what you're doing here. My only question was, should there be in addition some kind of a discretion in a situation where, like, you might have a base closure and the whole school would have to be closed down or something? I don't know.
If a school district, as a district, goes out of business, so to speak, ceases to exist because it has no students.
No, it wouldn't be the whole district, but one school in the district.
I see. If the, I don't know really how to answer that. I think that if a school suddenly becomes inoperative, the school district is going to face quite a number of costs in shutting down the operation. It's going to have disposal costs, it's going to have maintenance costs, it's going to have utilities costs, it's going to have probably more costs per square foot apart from the giving of education than it might have if the school building could just sit there and decay, but obviously it won't just sit there and decay. So the need to phase down the operation, I think, still exists.
So if I may, just one thing. What we had in Anchorage is more subtle, but just as costly. And that is a major population shift. It didn't relate to a decrease. Now, we've had a decrease in enrollment because people left after the pipeline. But over a period of time, people have shifted from the downtown area and from Spinard to South Anchorage. The results have been that whole schools have been closed down and new schools in other parts of the city have had to be built. And this is an expensive proposition, and maybe something we ought to look at anyway. That's what's in my
mind. I agree, Mr. Gruenberg, that is something that needs to be looked at.
Representative Gall, your amendment only has this hold harmless provision come into play when ADM is the cause of the loss of funding, or are other factors also allowable to trigger this hold harmless effect?
As to the implementation, I would defer to the department who drafted the language.
Steve, could you join us? Because I also
just
have a question about fiscal impact.
I believe it's just the idea, whatever it says.
If the instruction units decrease.
My reading of it would be ADM is the only factor that triggers this hold harmless provision. Is that the way it is?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Steve Volk from the department. The trigger mechanism, Mr. Chairman, is instructional units.
Mm-hmm.
Now, presumably that means that there has been a reduction in average daily membership with that effect,
mm-hmm.
but it only deals with the instructional unit decline.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is ADM the only thing that can cause a decrease in the instructional unit?
To the best of my knowledge, that's correct. I would point out that there's a limitation, there's a limitation to the coverage of the amendment to elementary and secondary education ADM instructional units.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the only reason there could be a decline.
Okay, I just want that to be very clear. And could you discuss fiscal impact of, I mean, I would imagine a lot of this is speculative for the future, but I would imagine now the Department of Education knows, which districts will find themselves in this situation or this triggering in their funding situation in the coming year.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the effect of an amendment like this is purely speculative. Now, I've heard it. The only information I have is what everybody else has heard, and that is that probably Heidelberg, perhaps Nenana, would be affected by this amendment. If that's true, and unless there is some unforeseen huge out-migration in those communities, I would suppose, just an informed guess, that it would be limited to one instructional unit per community, maybe as many as two, in which case it would be roughly 130,000 for, or 20,000 for Heidelberg, and probably 130,000 to 40,000 for Nenana, and it would be three quarters of that, so you're looking at $200,000, maybe, in any one fiscal year, if the limit is to those two communities.
Representative Boyer?
I'm kind of curious about the Skagway experience for just a moment, because I think it maybe, for me anyway, would help me focus on this. And it seemed to me that in addition to the old hold harmless, this hold harmless, that there are other statutory requirements that retain or pertain to teacher retention that cause this to be a real problem. If you, and perhaps Steve could address those issues. Didn't we in fact have teachers in classrooms with no students who were being kept on because of the other laws that, as they relate to teacher retention, that if those were different, you wouldn't have this as much of a need for this? I can't recall the exact situation, but perhaps you could shed some light on that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, through the chair, the only reason you can non-retain a tenured teacher, other than malfeasance or non-compliance with the school laws of the state, is if there is a reduction in student enrollment. A loss of money doesn't get you there. Presumably, if that law were changed, it would mitigate the need for any other kind of protection for the district.
Representative Gall, would you also like to respond?
Yeah, thank you very much. The situation in Skagway was the result of a loss of enrollment. We were able to reduce teachers, so that didn't occur there. And I think one of the things that Mr. Hall said that rather surprises me is the notion that there's something speculative about this, since we have a history of applying this amendment. I mean, this wasn't the statute, so there's nothing speculative about it.
Mr. Chairman, Hall, if I may, I was referring to the information that I have heard as to the districts that would fall under its aegis. I believe that was the question as to the potential fiscal impact, not anything
else. Well, for the purposes of the record, though, the potential fiscal impact, just like all inferences that are made by people using logic, can be referenced back to the historic fiscal impact. There is well-documented historic fiscal impact, which we could use to predict very accurately what would happen given any decline in enrollment in any school district in this state. So speculative in the sense that it hasn't happened and that we don't know the exact number of students, but not at all speculative in terms of what the impact would be given a known number of students declining in any known school district. So with all due respect, I don't see anything speculative about it at all. It's just a question of whether we want to do it.
Representative Larson.
Sure. The broader picture again, and I'm going to just mention a couple of things here real quick, because we mentioned Heidelberg and then Representative Boyer spoke, but for example, in Heidelberg, we spend twice as much per student as we do in Fairbanks. In Heidelberg, we have one teacher for every 9.7 students. The pupil-teacher ratio is half the size of what it is in Fairbanks. In Heidelberg, we spend three times as much for administrative costs. In fact, if Heidelberg would contract out their administrative costs, they could save $240,000 per year and have enough money.
Heidelberg doesn't even have a principal. I don't know where you
get
this information.
Where do they have their $2,266 per student administrative cost?
I can't verify the accuracy of your figures, Mr. Larson, but I can assure you that Heidelberg doesn't have a principal, so I don't know what in heaven's name you're speaking about.
Mm-hmm. Going off the report record here.
Are there any further questions for Mr. Holt? If not, if you could stay with us, I'd like to ask Mr. Rose to join us. Mr. Rose, I apologize to you for passing you over when we had 469 before us. I'm sorry about that, but if you'd like to go ahead and comment on 398.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I'm Carl Rose with the School Board Association. I'd like to speak in favor of the amendment. I think what we're talking about here is the ability of a school district to maintain the integrity of their program when faced with a drastic downturn in funding through ADM or instructional unit. I think we still have a responsibility to those remaining students. And basically what we're asking for is the ability to defray that shock of a downturn over a period of 3 years. I think it's a good business, to ask your school districts to perform. I think this would be a tremendous hindrance if you were to lose 10% of your funding and be asked to account for that in 1 year. So, and from a very practical sense, I was a former board president in Skagway when we were faced with that issue. And the ability to defray that cost over 3 years allowed us to scale down our program and not impact our programs too adversely. So, as I look at the issue in the amendment, I think it's an appropriate way to address a downturn in funding. The shock and impact on a local district could be tremendous.
And Mr. Rose, we do have written comments from you as well in the packets that will accompany the bill. Representative Grunberg?
Mr. Rose, let me just ask you, and I'm not intimately familiar with a lot of the school districts around, but there are some, and I don't remember what the name of the school district is, that it has floating schools.
Southeast Island.
Okay, and as I understand it, some of these may be very dependent upon one industry, and the industry may take upturns and downturns, and they may be fairly short but major economic swings. And the way that the amendment is written at the present time, and I'm not being critical of the amendment, but I want to be sure that if we do adopt it, or whatever we adopt it, we know what we're doing. It doesn't require that there be a permanent decrease. The word line two of the amendment, if the instructional units decrease by 10% is what it is. And you have, say, a district that is largely dependent economically on an industry like logging or something, or fishing or whatever, oil that has vast swings in employment in a short term that are fairly maybe foreseeable, maybe cyclical, but at least it's more likely than not that the migratory force will be back in the district within a year. Can the district administrators plan for that by having relatively short-term contracts, doing things like that, that would, from a planning point of view, make it foreseeable so that they can not be hit all at once if they realize that we're going to be logging off this one section of timber here over the next year, and then the force is going to be gone. So we can see that we're going to have, let's say in the school district, 20 more kids in, but it'll only be for the next year. And should we be looking here more at a foreseeably permanent decrease or something like that? I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, in response, I think that most administration, I think if they can see in a foreseeable future and plan, they do that. I think what we're talking about here is an unexpected downturn in funding for, and that's what we're really looking at.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just talking about, but look at the language. The language is not modified to do that, and it may be that if that's the intent, that there be something like that. I don't know.
Representative Davis?
Mr. Chairman, to Mr. Grunberg, if they're talking about the decrease in from one fiscal year to the next, mm-hmm. only. I mean, they're not talking about over a long, no. and then they're giving out a formula by which you could take care of that. But obviously, if it increases or decreases more or whatever, that's going to alter all of that. But they're still talking about 1 year by 1 year. The reason that particular district, which happens to be mostly in Peter's district, has floating schools is for that very reason. Because if a logging camp shuts down in one area, they can just move the school to another area.
Yeah, I understand.
And, you know, that's the whole, that, in fact, that is what that administration has done as a way of ensuring that they have that flexibility.
Maybe I should have used a non-floating school district as an example, anyway.
Mr. Rose, thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gall.
Yeah, I need to just add, because I didn't mean to react with shock at Mr. Larson's statements, but I guess the point that I'd like to make is that if there are inequities in the foundation formula, I've got recommendations to deal with those, as probably does everybody here at the table, including yourself, who has a bill pending. If we could solve that today, I think that would be swell, but what happens to Heidelberg today happens to Fairbanks tomorrow, and the only point in this amendment is not to try to correct the foundation formula, which is really what the guts of my remarks were, that one thing has nothing to do with another. Irrespective of how bad the formula is, once a school district or any other public institution responsibly sets up shop and then suddenly, due to circumstances beyond its control, suffers a major fiscal impact, again, it just seems to me like gosh, I mean, it's just like having money in the bank so that if, or unemployment insurance, so that if you lose your job, you have a little bit of a bridge to the next job, or you have a little money in the bank to allow yourself to pay the bills until you get the next job. In this case, they're not going to get the next job. They might, but probably a decline in enrollment means a decline in enrollment for a period of time, and this would allow a bit of a grace period. That's all the amendment does, and I, you know, my defense of Heidelberg's management, I don't think really has any bearing on the issue, and I guess, as I say, I would feel that it would apply to a problem that could be experienced in Fairbanks or Heidelberg or Tok or Juneau just as easily.
Just very briefly, I agree with Representative Gall. We have to look at each one of these things individually, but at the same time, what I'm saying, I think we have to look at the total picture. Sometimes it's how we do business that makes it costly. There's a better way of doing business. And at the same time, when we look at the instructional unit and so forth, one of the things we might do, instead of raising the instructional unit, are there things we can do for school districts, maybe a statewide insurance. Maybe the state could take over paying all the insurance, something like that. Maybe we can mesh different school districts so that we got single administrative units instead of several small ones. So those are the things that I'm saying we should look at.
Okay. Mr. Hull, could you come back to the table, please?
Chairman. While Mr. Hull comes back to the table, I would just like to agree with Mr. Larson, because he mentioned a point that I think this committee should discuss in a future meeting, and then the statewide insurance program for schools among the consolidation steps that would not in any way impact local control or really hit any of the other issues. There are other services, too, that I think we could provide statewide. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. Before I ask my questions, Mr. Holt, was there anybody else here today who wanted to comment on the bill? Okay. Mr. Green wants to comment. We are not going to have time to come to a conclusion on this today, then. So, Mr. Holt, let me give you some direction here. With the zero fiscal note, I would like you to think about putting some analysis here about the considerations and potential fiscal impact of the amendment. I know it's well, we have a disagreement about whether it's speculative or determinable, but I think there should be a few lines of discussion here about the potential effects of the amendment if it's adopted. So if you could just be working on that, if the amendment's adopted at our next meeting, then we'll append that to these materials. The second thing is I'd like to ask Representative Gall to think about the title, and all of us to think about the title. We determined before that ADM is the only factor that could trigger this hold harmless. Before we pinned that down, I was thinking that there needed to be more specificity in the language that would reference that fact. Wouldn't be necessary, but I'm wondering if this title, the current title of the bill, and then if thinking amendment number one were adopted with the language relating to the number of allowable instruction units and determining state foundation aid for school district, is the title tight enough to preclude those other kinds of add-ons to the formula that are swirling around out there that people on the committee were concerned about, taking all of the steam out of any kind of comprehensive look at the formula? I need direction from some of the rest of you about the title, because that was the major concern of the departments, was that this not become a Christmas tree. Mr. Holt, could you speak to that now, or?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. It's my view that the title, as proposed in the amendment, would have to be tightened in order to prevent, for instance, adopting another schedule.
Mm-hmm.
It's easily done, but it seems to me that that might be something the committee would want to look at. I'd be glad to help you do that.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, can I ask?
Representative Gall.
Steve, it just didn't seem to me that a title change was needed, really, that since it deals with the because it refers to previous underpayments or overpayments. I see.
Overpayments will be eliminated.
Yeah, the amendment changes that.
I see. Well, I would also appreciate your guidance on the tightest possible title here that would include the amendment.
Okay. So with those two things, if you could take those under advisement. Mr. Green, are you here in Juneau? Could you be with us when the bill comes back, or are you?
No, I'm
you couldn't be.
Down.
Okay, could you join us, and we'll give you a couple of minutes here. I apologize for, well, this merits a lot of discussion. Representative Larson, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bob Green, and I'm the acting superintendent of Petersburg Schools. I wanted to testify to make a couple of points that I thought were not made clear in the previous testimony. Number one, we're supportive of this bill because it does a couple of things to help out when a catastrophe strikes. And there was a statement made that the reason, one of the reasons why you can non-retain a tenured teacher is because of loss of enrollment. While that is true, the statement was not made that you can only do that at the end of the contract period. And so your costs in the current year are, in fact, costs to the district that you cannot get out from under. And this amendment, then, is appropriate because it mitigates the first year loss when the costs to the districts are high. And it gives the district enough time to get into the second year and adjust your staff as much as you can, assuming that you don't have all tenured people. The second point that I'd like to make is that this is really a catastrophic provision in a bill. In Petersburg, that would the 10% provision would mean about 70 students. That would be a major catastrophe, a loss of 70 students in Petersburg. Financially, in every way you look at it, we don't anticipate that would happen. If you look at the history of how often when this provision was law, how often it was used, I will give you an indication that you know, I can only think of maybe two or three times in 10 or 12 years that it was used as a mechanism to save school districts from financial ruin. And so I don't think you need to get too concerned that it's going to be used everywhere all the time. It'll probably come up once 5 years. The other factor that concerned me was statements regarding the cost of doing business in school districts. And I sit here with very clean skirts. Petersburg, in the statistics that Representative Larson used, has the lowest administrative cost in the state of Alaska in all school districts. We beat Juneau out by $1. All we need to have is a fluctuation in our student population, and those statistics are skewed all over the place. I was sitting with the mayor of Haines when he came down to Petersburg the other day, and we were comparing notes on this, and his cost in Haines was $1,100 student for administration. Our costs are $660-some, and we're trying to figure out the difference when we have exactly the same number of personnel. And it boils down to statistics. How many students you have to spread your cost over. You can have exorbitant costs in a district in a statistical analysis and find out you've only got one person. Because that's because you don't have very many students to spread that cost over. And so I would urge the committee to be careful when you look at data that says so many dollars per student, this district spends 5,000 and that district spends 1,000 and so on. You cannot use those kinds of data to make your analysis because there's not really much a district can do about it. I sit in a district that has a PTR of about, my class sizes run 20 to 22. Some people will say, that's not good enough, do better. I'd love to send the kids into Petersburg and we'll educate them. We won't have to add students. We can put a few more kids in every class. The problem is, logistically, it can't be done. Those are the kinds of things that you need to take into consideration. Thank you for giving me a chance.
I understand. Bob, could you get that first point in writing to the committee so that they understand the fiscal mechanism or have it in the record? That business about carryover, because I think that's awfully important for people.
Representative Boyer?
And that was my point in bringing up Skagway, is that I specifically had recalled that they weren't allowed to, with a contract, to release teachers, and there was an incurred cost, and that this mechanism did in fact kick in.
I see. I apologize. I see what you mean, and I had missed that entirely, and I'd be very grateful to understand it better, and if I could read a little statement, it would help.
Mr. Green, thank you very much. Before I hold the bill over, I just want to say to Mr. Manners and Mr. Rose and Mr. McPheeters that we missed you, all three of you, yesterday when we had the school performance bills before us. We were disappointed that you weren't here to hear that discussion. We thought it was an important one, so we'll look for your participation in the discussion of those bills as they move through the process.
Mr. Chairman, I just...
Representative Grimberg.
Yeah, if when you're writing to us, Bob, I'd appreciate if you could give us the three examples and the circumstances.
House Bill 398 with Amendment Number 1 pending will be held over. I'll try and get it back on the schedule as soon as we can. If there's no further business to come before us, the meeting's adjourned at 10:05 a.m. Thank you.